Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Coming up on this episode of White Wine Question Time.
He said that you were so obsessed with MTV News that you used to walk up to people on campus and go, "This is Melvin O'Doom for MTV News."
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, but that's exactly what...
That's self-belief, my friend.
That's crazy that you know that.
So like, it was like manifesting before we called it manifesting. You became part of their setup whilst dressed as a dolphin performing The Running Man. So, I mean, as auspicious starts go, Melv, it's up there.
You do your research, Kate, man. I tell you that. My sister would sit and watch all the videos with me, and then she learnt Jeanette's moves, not as well as Jeanette did, but she would basically practice with me every night after I practiced with Jeanette in the day, and then that's how I learnt the routine.
She is a great sister. Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a voice who'll be familiar to millions who've grown up listening to him first on Kiss FM, where he hosted The Breakfast Show with Ricky Hayward-Williams and Charlie Hedges for 12 years, before moving on to Radio 1, where they now host the evening slot every weeknight from 9 till 11. Now 43, he was born and raised in London with his younger sister Yona, and his Ghanaian parents split when he was four. From a young age, he knew he wanted to be a performer. He loved making people laugh and started to turn that into something that could grow into a profession whilst he was at university working on student radio and then Luton Radio with his then new best friend, Ricky. Via a brief detour working as a drama teacher, he's worked his way up from a stint as an unpaid work experience boy at One Extra to become an award-winning host of the Kiss Breakfast Show and now the evening show at Radio 1. As well as his work on air, he's also fronted television shows for the BBC, for MTV, Extra Factor for ITV, and in 2016 managed to win Strictly Come Dancing the Christmas Special just months after being the first celebrity to be voted off from that year's series. And right now, he's taking part in a brilliant brand new series for Channel 4. It's called Save Our Sperm. Yes, you heard me right. Let's dial him up to hear more, shall we? It's Melvin O'Doom. How are you?
Hi, Kate. You know what? You make me actually sound good.
You are good, you nutter.
I should take you out on dates and you can just do that intro for me and that would be amazing.
Yeah, I heard about one of your terrible dating experiences.
One, I've heard a few.
Well, because are you still single, by the way, Melv?
I am at the moment, yeah. What, are you thinking of setting me up with someone?
But there's always, listen, yeah, that's
really
a great idea.
Literally, my Rolodex is clicking in my mind.
All right, yeah, think about it. Let me know.
You're a nice guy. There's not a lot of you about.
Thank you.
Do you mind an older woman?
I don't mind.
Thinking for me, by the way. This is for friends, yeah?
Are you chatting me up right now?
No, I'm thinking I've got some mates, but, you know, do you like to date women your own age, a little bit older, a little bit younger? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not fussy, if I'm honest.
You're not fussy?
Yeah.
Is this because of the undue pressure that you're under from your female family members to get it on and get it done and get some grandchildren
when you say
out?
That, basically, my mum and my sister, like, can't wait for me to have kids. But I need to find, like, a partner first. Surely that comes first before having kids.
Well, apparently you've kind of decided to, you know, bank it for now anyway with Save Our Sperm whilst the quest continues. Well, before we get back to your love life and how I might be able to help, Save Our Sperm.
Yeah.
What?
Okay. All right. So Channel 4 and a production company called Crack It Productions got in touch with me and they said, look, Melvin, we want to speak to you about this TV show. There's been a rapid decline in male sperm over the years. And if it continues, your grandchildren will struggle to have children. We want to create a show where we'll raise awareness for males all across the UK about what they can do in terms of improving their sperm count. And I was like, look, I know nothing about this. I don't know why you're asking me. But I thought it was interesting, and I've always said to myself,
it's interesting.
It's mad interesting. That,
like, just the science alone on those stats is enough to make you lean in and go, hang on a minute, what?
Yeah.
You know?
It's and I think when it comes to fertility, a lot of people just focus on women.
Yeah.
And this kind of highlighted the fact that actually men can do their part when it comes to creating a child. And I changed my whole lifestyle. Myself, Russell Kane, and Ollie from Made in Chelsea, Ollie Locke, we were basically guinea pigs for about 3 months, and we had to change little things about what we were doing in our life to see if we could improve our sperm count. And luckily, I was able to do that. And since then, I've had people messaging me.
Mel, you trebled your sperm count.
Yeah, no.
You were the success story of the trio, right?
Put it this way, after this podcast, you're going to be pregnant. That's how full of sperm I am right now.
You're so fertile, I can smell it from here.
You could actually smell it. So it's like, it was a crazy show. At the start, I knew nothing. At the end, I knew so much. And hopefully we can help a lot of men and couples out there.
So despite the fact that, you know, obviously the title suggests something very different, there's a real purpose to this show. I mean, I know for Russell's been on as a guest before. And he's a lovely guy. And he was very clear at the time, this was way before the show that you've just done, that he didn't want any more children. He had one daughter, Mina, and he said she's, you know, she was enough.
Yeah.
And then he was told that across the course of the show that actually he's effectively infertile now, isn't he?
Yeah.
That was a lot for him to come to terms with. That's big news.
Yeah, I think for any man, I mean, there is a link between, you know, male fertility and masculinity. And I think when we started that show and we did our sperm test or whatever and basically wanked into a cup,
how did that work, but thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the nurse said the same.
Literally, that's what happened. And when we went into this clinic, we all wanted to do really well, and I think there is a direct link between the two things. And so although Russell doesn't want kids, like, you know, I think once, you know, we were given those figures, it was really quite an important bit of information. And Russell's a really interesting one. You know that he's a complete geek when it comes to science and all of this stuff. So he was doing, like, tests at home. He knew so much before we even got there. But in his case, a lot of the coffee that he's drinking, and there's a product that he uses on his hair, I can't remember the name of it, but that does have an effect, or had an effect on his fertility. So yeah, but he was able to increase his count as well. So there's so many different things. For me, it was, I have a lot of processed food, I have a lot of sweets, I drink a lot of bottled water, and I'm always, like, in layers. I love to be warm. So when I go to the gym, I used to have 3 layers, so I stopped all of that and was able to change it.
Yeah, I made a show years and years ago about testicular cancer, but we touched on some of this. It was called Better Mind Your Bollocks.
Right, okay. Great names.
It's a great name, isn't it? I'd suggest it's better than Save Our Sperm.
But, I wouldn't argue with you, actually. It is a better name.
Yeah. And Gordon Ramsay and Jamie Oliver were on the show. So basically, it was a bunch of very well-known men all discussing their relationship from sort of puberty onwards with their testicles, right? Just to try and sort of shake off some of the taboos around it. And one of the things that the chefs talked about a lot was literally standing over hot ovens. It was literally cooking their sperm.
Yeah. Yeah,
damaging their sperm count. So you've got to keep them cool is what I learned.
Yeah, there's so much that we do without even thinking about it. For me, again, heated seats in the car. Like, yeah. For me, it's a luxury. But that's not great for your sperm. Going in hot tubs, not great for your sperm.
Yeah.
Jacuzzis, anything like that is just terrible. Because that's why our testicles are outside of our bodies.
So they stay cool.
Remain cool. And we're not doing that. A lot of people aren't doing that. And if it continues to decrease in that way, when we're older, our grandchildren will struggle to conceive.
Really interesting. So you're glad you took part?
Yeah, I mean, when they asked me to do it, I was like, why are you asking me? I was like, how can I help? But by the end of it, I thought it was really, really important show for me to do. And like I said, I've had so many people messaging, men, women, asking for advice, asking what I did to change my lifestyle. I kind of told them my story and my experience, but then I've kind of pointed them in the direction of some of the specialists that I work with, like Dr. Anand. There's a lady called Melanie who we work with. There's a clinic that we went to in Beckinsale.
So genuinely, if men are worried, I mean, they can catch this on foreign demand, right?
Yeah.
It's up, it's streaming now. But it gives you just some really simple things that you can do without going to see a doctor.
Yeah.
To just give your sperm count a better chance, right?
Yeah.
Like you
and
said,
it's,
no
it's
heated
all
seats,
safe stuff.
Cut down the coffees, no smoking, don't get in a jacuzzi.
It's not crazy stuff and it's not going to cost you any money.
No.
But yeah, hopefully it should change things for you.
So for the purposes of research, I started clicking around, having a little read up on you.
Oh, God. Okay.
And I learned some things about you and what it is that you're looking for in a relationship.
Here we go. What did I say? What sources did you go to for this, by the way?
Well, you sat and chatted to Ricky quite a lot, your lovely Ricky.
Don't listen to anything I say with Ricky, by the way.
No?
Yeah, it's probably going to get me in trouble.
Well, no. I mean, one thing you did allude to was that you had a bit of a thing for Carol Vorderman. Now, Carol has 5 partners, but I hear there's room for 6.
I mean, listen. I've always been a fan of Carol Vorderman. That woman can fly helicopters. She's good with numbers. She's, you know, an amazing broadcaster, activist. I mean, what is there not to like about the Vorders? Do you know Carol Vorderman?
I do know Carol Vorderman.
Is it?
Yeah, I do.
I feel like there's a queue, though.
Well, no, what there is a rota.
There's a rota. Okay, there's a rota. I don't know if I could share my Vorders with anyone.
Really?
Yeah.
Leave it with me, my friend.
Okay, yeah. I'll leave it in your capable hands.
It's in my filing cabinet. Things to do. Mention to Carol. Yeah. Okay. I mean,
she knows.
I think
by
she's
the
got
way.
Room for one more. Last I read, there was five guys, right?
Right.
I reckon she could squeeze in 6, but like God, she still needs to rest on a Sunday.
Okay, cool. I'm happy to work around her schedule, but you know, the Vorders actually knows I'm a fan of her work. Right?
Does she?
Yeah, I actually wrote a rap about her. On a show on BBC, it was ITV2. It's called Don't Hate the Players.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of a section where you have to write a rap. And I decided to write my rap about Carol Vorderman. And she's seen it because she reposted it on her page. So she definitely knows.
Right.
I don't know. I can't understand why I haven't been added to the rota.
No, I need to get you to the top of her feed.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The other thing that you shared with Ricky was one of your worst dates, which was with a girl that brought her baby along.
Yeah. I mean, and look, I love children, but just let me know if they're going to come on a first date. Like,
first
date. And like, it was, I didn't go to a kid-friendly restaurant either. So it was just a really awkward situation. And I don't think she realised, I don't think she was aware of the fact that I thought it was weird to bring your child to a date that I'd
You
never
knew
even
she had a baby,
of.
Right?
No, she didn't tell me nothing. I didn't know she had a child.
So you made a reservation for 2, 3 appear.
Yeah, 3 appear. I went to meet her by the car, like near the venue. And then she opened the passenger side and then pulled out this baby. I was like, whose baby is this? And she's like, this is mine. This is my son. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't know you had a son. She's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I couldn't get a sitter, so I brought him along. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. And so, yeah, we just had this really awkward date. And the son was looking at me like, who are you? My uncle, my new father. I don't know who you are. And yeah, I never saw her again. We still follow each other on social media. And I've said this story quite a few times. So I'm surprised she hasn't messaged me to say, Melv, are you talking about me by any chance? It could be today. It might happen now.
Maybe she was just on a daddy search.
Yeah, for real, which is fine. But
on paper, you've got it all. You've got a steady job. Yeah, you're well liked. She can stalk you in a good way, like really do her homework. There's loads of you online. You're not just working off some old Facebook account.
Now you're just freaking me out. Yeah, maybe you're right there. She's probably women looking do. For like a new father yeah. for a child.
Perhaps. And now you've got babies in the family.
Yes, yeah, lots of kids. There's always kids in our family, there's always kids. But yeah, my sister has just had twins, so it's the twins, and then I've got like a niece who is 4 years older than them, and they're all just like amazing. They're so cute, too cute.
So maybe, you know, maybe that ferocious sperm count of yours is going to come good one day. God, that's a very bad turn of phrase that I've just used there.
Yeah, I've never heard it being talked about in that way. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's okay,
should we move to our first question?
Yeah, let's move on.
I wanted to start off by talking to you about persistence, which you mm-hmm. seem to have in an abundance, right? And to my eye, you sort of live by the mantra of if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. And certainly when it came to making it as a broadcaster. And also, I suppose with your appearances on Strictly, right? You go into Strictly, you're first voted off, you're gutted, but didn't stop you going back and then only winning it like a matter of months later. So talk me through why persistence mm-hmm. is more important than the pride of sort of, you know, running away in the face of rejection and what it's taught you in terms of where you are now.
In relation to my career, it's because I couldn't see myself doing anything else. I remember doing work experience for my uncle in central London, and it was the most boring office I've ever worked in my life. And it was like an insurance broker's, and there was no one in this place that, you know, I really connected with. There was like just one guy who I used to kind of go to lunch with. But other than that, I realized at an early age I didn't want to be in that environment anymore. I'm not saying that that's a bad place to work. Like, there's loads of people that work in offices and they've got great jobs and they get paid really well, but it just wasn't for me. And I just remember thinking to myself, there are so many channels, there are so many stations, there's so many production companies out there. There will be someone out there that will accept me and get me and allow me to do what I do for them and their audiences. So that, in terms of my career, that's how I kind of like worked things out in my mind. And in terms of the Strictly story, that was actually, it's quite interesting because when I got kicked off Strictly, I was devastated. I was so upset because I thought I let down so many people. Like, my mum's a big fan of the show. Jeanette Manrara, who was my dance partner at the time, is incredible, who you probably know as
yes,
well.
Yes, her and Aliash have been on the show.
So you know them really well and you know how hard they work, and she put so much effort into me for those first few weeks on the main show. And so when I got kicked off, I felt like I let them down. And obviously for me, it was kind of a weird situation because I was up against Anastasia. She had a really bad injury. She didn't want to do her dance off. So I felt like I never got that chance to really fight for my place.
Yeah. And you're a good dancer, right? You can more than hold your own in a nightclub.
I think I'm all right. Yeah. In the club, I'm okay. Yeah. And so like...
So it wasn't like an embarrassment of riches. You weren't, you know, John Sargent.
I wasn't embarrassed, but I felt like I let everyone down because I think dancing by yourself in a club and dancing with a partner doing the tango is two completely different things. And when they called me back... completely different.
So much to think about in ballroom in Latin American, isn't there?
It's like a minefield of all this information and practice. And I remember coming home and BBC called me up and said, Melvin, we want you to do the Christmas special. And initially I said no. I actually came home, called my sister up and said, look, they want me to do the Christmas special. What do you think? And she was like, you have to do it, Melv. And I was like, why? She goes, because you'll go on and you'll smash it. And I was like, yeah, but I got kicked off the main show. And she's like, yeah, but you're my brother and I know you're going to do well. And they didn't get a chance to meet the real you. She was like, just go and do it. And I was like, okay, cool. So then I called them up. I said, cool. Did some rehearsals, came back. And my sister would sit and watch all the videos with me. And then she learnt Jeanette's moves, not as well as Jeanette did, but she would basically practice with me every night after I practiced with Jeanette in the day. And then that's how I learnt the routine.
She is a great sister.
Yeah, and she just believed in me. She believed in me. And I think because if she believed in me so much, I kind of got that confidence back, and that's how I ended up.
It's great, though, because you rewrote the ending, which is lovely, right? Because an experience that would have otherwise always sat a bit kind of like...
I wouldn't... Now I go to the shows now. I went to see Ricky the other day when he was on the Christmas special. And I've watched so many people. Like, I'm friends with all the pros. Like, I DJed at Jeanette's wedding. For me, my memory of Strictly is still a positive one. So it's mad because I won and I lost all in the same year.
But it's a positive memory because you persistently stayed in the game or went back for more until you got the outcome you desired.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose you're right. I never really thought of it that way, but yeah, you're definitely right. And
like with the broadcasting, Ricky tells this story of like when you two met at uni, you became mates, right? And you're tinkering around on local radio and student radio, and you both got this idea that you want to be broadcasters. He said that you were so obsessed with MTV News that you used to walk up to people on campus and go, this is Melvin O'Doom for MTV News.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, but that's exactly what...
That's self-belief, my friend.
That's crazy that you know that.
So like, it was like manifesting before we called it manifesting.
Yeah. I mean, because look, there was... On the screens at that time, there was maybe three black guys. You had Richard Blackwood, you had Lenny Henry, you had Trevor McDonald. And so I remember just watching Richard and going, I think I could do that.
That's dismal, isn't it? That we can only cite three prominent black men on television.
It was a mad thing. It was crazy. And so I just remember thinking, at uni, my mate had a camcorder, and any time he had it on, I'd just pretend I was on MTV, and then ended up on MTV.
How'd you end up on MTV? Because I worked at VH1, which was part of MTV, and I learned so without that, I don't know that I would ever have ended up becoming the broadcaster that I am, because it's just hours and hours of output where you learn to be better.
I feel like you were there in the naughty times as well. Like,
I was.
I've heard stories about you lot, but no. I got the job because of Ricky. Ricky was on MTV News, and then he ended up doing news with Laura Whitmore. And then, basically, the truth is, I so badly wanted to work there, I would follow Ricky into work every week, every single week, and just, like, crack jokes in the office and fool around. And then after a while...
How did you pass yourself off as, like, what, Ricky's assistant?
I literally would just, because we obviously were still doing, we were doing Kiss at this point. Right. So people knew we were like a duo together. And I'd just kind of be like, oh, I'm just here with Rick's, just finished the radio, and would just always be around. And then his boss, a woman called Lisa Stoker, who you probably know as well.
Yeah.
She was like, Melvin, do you want to audition to do continuity with Ricky and Laura? And then that was it. I just got the job.
When you get those jobs, right, those moments, you never forget them, do you? When you've wanted something so bad for so long. Talk to me about that moment and how you marked it.
So I want to go back a little bit. Because you know when people go to you, oh, you know what, you have to be good at networking in this industry. And you do, but I hate the forced, like, act of networking, like going up to someone because if you want a job. I always think you should be natural. Just be yourself. And if someone likes you, then they'll notice that. And so I remember being at a party. There's a guy called Azeem, who you must know. You must know Azeem. He's just well-connected. He knows everyone in the industry. And every single year, he does a massive party for his birthday. Back then, it was just a party. But now he does, like, fancy dress and people go in. A little bit like Jonathan Ross.
Yes, you've turned up loads of times being proper, full-on fancy dress at his parties, right?
So Azeem had this party. It was in this really cool bowling alley. And Ricky's boss, now my old boss, Lisa Stokoe, was there. And we're just dancing. We're cracking joke, dancing. And she literally turns to me and goes, Melv, you're actually really funny. Why don't you come in and audition? And that's what happened. That's what happened. I didn't go and do an interview. I didn't like beg for a job. I didn't go check this show reel. I didn't go, here's my CV. It was literally, we were just catching joke, having fun. And she was like, I think you'll be funny on MTV. And that's how I got it.
Can you remember the first time you tagged yourself on MTV? You know, when you go, I'm Melvin Adoom, this is MTV.
It was, it was for MTV Digs. So it was continuity with Digs. And we had like a variety of different producers on the show and they were just all amazing. But it's mad because what, now you say that, when I think about it, when I was actually there, I don't think I realised how big a deal it was until it was all over.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like when I was there, I was like, I'm here, I've done it, I've made it. I'm almost supposed to be here. Yeah. And then when I speak to people like yourself and you're like, Melvin, remember when you used to talk about your time at university and you'd have the sign off on your mate's cam, like Damien's camcorder, and Rick's would say, you know, you'd pretend to be on MTV Base. And I was thinking, oh, sugar. Yeah, he's right. Like, I used to really speak that into existence. And then I did it. And I didn't realize all this because when we were at Kiss, everything was just this mad whirlwind. We ended up on Kiss and then it was MTV, then 4Music. Then we had Extra Factor, then all these just things, everything kind of happened really
well. It dominoes, doesn't it? But you always need something to light the touch paper. And I know for you it was Kiss, but MTV was the one that opened you out into the world of broadcasting rather than just radio. Put you on camera.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, I think a lot of tele networks looked to MTV and the talent they signed for what was coming up next, right? So who's coming up next? Because I think in the 90s, MTV were on the money. I mean, I remember the MTV makeup room, right, in the 90s was me, Davina McCall, Sarah Cox, Kat Dealey, Edith Bowman doing news,
sugar.
Right? That you look at where we all ended up, you know? That's so I think that a lot of stall was put by, because the audience numbers were tiny on MTV, but it was the industry eyes that were watching. That was where it was important. And will you make that moment count? And there's so many that don't. There's so many that go to the pub. And I was always the one that went home and got my scripts in order for the next day. Boring, but you know.
It's not boring because you're a G at what you do. And I remember I've kind of... I've bumped into you so many different times at different opportunities. I remember you did something for the Prince's Trust and
That's
you were
right.
actually producing that. And I've seen you like do presenting stuff for so many different corporations and companies. And I see your name flying around. And I think I remember when I started to worry about the young cats that were coming through. Because when we started, there was like, when you're young, you're confident. You just think you're the best at everything.
So confident.
And then the young cats come from you're like, oh shit. Like, where do I sit in this arena, in this industry? And I think one thing that you can never forget is longevity. Like, I'm really proud of how long myself and Ricks and Charlie have been in this industry and we've been able to do a bit of TV, a bit of DJing, a bit of radio and still have like these audiences that want to tap into it. And
it's interesting. I think you get to this stage and actually that becomes my marker for success now. It's like when people say, what do you want to do next? It's like this, just this. Like I'm so happy because the variety that I have is and has been for so many years such that I never get and nothing gets boring. Nothing gets tired. But actually after a certain, I think once you've gone past 2 decades and you're well past that now, you're up to 2 decades yet?
Yeah.
That's it. I think it's actually success is being here.
Yeah, you're right. I agree.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm going to move to our next question. Melv, name three things that absolutely infuriate you.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't care. I'm going to tell you the truth. Traffic wardens is number one. Number two.
Why do they infuriate you?
Just because of, I think there are other jobs for you to do. Like, because of...
God forgive me, I did say that recently in a rage as somebody wrote me a ticket.
Yeah, I just
I did
think...
say, and my son said to me, Mum, you've just shown yourself up so bad. But I did say there's 2 million vacancies in this country and you chose this as a profession.
Yeah, it just makes too many people unhappy. And most traffic wardens do not care about giving you a bill for parking up. So yeah, traffic warden. But I get they need to do it because then people will just be parking up. There'll be someone in front of my house right now.
What I'd like to know is, do they get like bonuses every time they write a ticket?
I'm sure they do because they take too much pride in it. Too much pride. So that's my first one. The second one is, and I might get a bit political, is, and it's linked to traffic as well, is cameras.
100%. Right, because they're served up as something that's there to keep you safe, but really it's just to create revenue.
Yeah. Like, and I tell you what, a little while ago, I was really upset about, you remember like Sarah Everard?
Yeah.
And there's been a few women who've gone missing. And as you know, I was raised in a house of women. My mum, my sister, my cousin lived with me for a little bit. And so, like, I hold women in very high regard in my family, in my community in general. So for you to create this technology that will scan your number plate and send you a bill, but it can't find someone that gets kidnapped, for me is a madness. That's insane. That should be the priority for that technology.
Totally.
So for me, that's the second thing.
I could not agree more. Really,
like, it really upsets me. Like, that's the situation.
Yeah. It even really upsets me that women feel that they have to have the security of safety cameras around them in order to walk home at 11 o'clock at night, as Sarah was.
Yeah.
Now, I live not far from where she was taken. I drive that route most days, and it never not chills my bones, you know, that a police officer did that to her.
It's crazy.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's crazy. And the last thing, trolls, like just general hate on it on the internet.
What? Yeah. Do you know what? I'd love to sit in a room full of those people and just ask them why. They must be so unhappy.
I think for some people it's escapism. It's a little bit like being a catfish, and it's a really mean persona to take on. And we're quite lucky actually because we don't get a lot of it. And I could probably count on one hand how many times someone sent something to me bad. But I'm quite lucky in that we're a threesome. Sounds a bit weird. But there's three of us.
Thruple.
Thruple. Big up David Hay. But because there's three of us, we could always... It doesn't always feel like a personal attack. But weirdly enough, we've started doing something on our show called Melvin Shade. Because some people like to diss me about my height or whatever, or my hair. So people always diss me. And I start reading them out now. And the audience...
Like the Jimmy Kimmel, is it Jimmy Kimmel that does it?
Yeah, like mean tweets, yeah. But it's turned around because of... I think initially people were teasing a little bit, but now it's become like you teasing your mate, like a bit of banter.
Yeah.
And so now
you're taking the power out of the conversation and giving it to yourself.
Because they're like, Melvin's going to read this out because he finds this funny. It's not because of, I think I'm going to upset him.
Yeah.
And so now I'll read out loads of tweets like dissing me. And actually it's always said with love because the people literally say, "Oh, Melvin, I'm only joking." And they're saying it with love. And so, but the real trolls who say mean stuff about people and it turns them to do crazy stuff, that really upsets me because I think people forget the power of words. And we lost, like, we lost a good friend years ago because he just didn't open up about how he felt and he took his own life. And I always got to think to myself, bro, like, you should have come and spoken to, like, there's so many of us. Like I told you, we got, you got me, you got Joseph, you got Josiah, you got all these boys here. We're all here, bruv. And he didn't feel comfortable. And so, yeah, I think people don't realize the power in their words. So, yeah, trolls on the internet really.
Do you know what? I think, I hope that we'll be sat here in 3 or 4 years' time, maybe not even that long, going, God, do you remember when you could troll on the internet and there was no accountability and no consequence? Because it's got to change.
Don't let me even get started. Because the real essence of this is the technology exists.
Of course it does.
The technology exists. If you can... If you can...
If you can flag that COVID is in a conversation, you can flag hate.
Mad.
Yeah.
So that leads me to believe that they want us to hate each other.
Well, it generates traffic. It keeps you on the sites. The eyeballs are there longer, of course. But that's why it needs an independent body policing it, so that people's interests and not profit interests are put at the heart of how technology is used.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, most of the people that write hate online would never cross the street, tap you on the shoulder and tell you you're fat, or come and pull your hair and insult you. They just wouldn't, right? Because they're cowards and because it's not acceptable behaviour. And in society, people would turn around and react and respond, you would hope, right? And so you can't behave like that towards another human being.
Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
So I think actually it is already happening. And I just worry sometimes that, you know, people with platforms like us, we don't do enough to stamp our feet and say, it's just not good enough. It's not good enough.
Well,
let's use this technology better.
You're doing
better.
It now. Well, I think we do, but the fact of the matter is...
I feel like I should be walking through the streets with a placard. Do you know what I mean?
You could do that, but no one's going to care. Like, it's, these people feel protected. It's similar to, like, you know when... That's why road rage is such a thing. Because people feel protected for that, for those few seconds, because they got like this little...
It's an early form of trolling.
Yeah. Basically.
You're pulling wanker signs.
Yeah, a bit of glass around
and
a bit of
metal. Through a locked
door. But if you're in your house and you think no one will find you, you just think, I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
I can do whatever I want. It's actually mad. But it's actually not the troll's fault. It's the people who create the technology. It's their issue. They need
but
to
you know
it.
What? They can fine you for driving a car through an area that they've decided now suddenly needs to have cleaner air. Mm. But they can't fine hate online.
They can.
Of course they can.
They can.
Oh, imagine, man, if it's time we ran for politics, my friend. I think this next chapter of our careers has been decided for us.
Exactly.
Listen, damn.
I'll be happy to live in number 10. Actually, I wouldn't want that job. No. It's a hard job. I'm not even going to go down this road with you.
No, but thanks for that. I think you're quite right to be angry about all of the above.
Thank you. Thanks for agreeing with me.
Well, we'll leave that one there then and move to our third and final question. I wanted to stick with partnerships, and you kind of set this up beautifully because they've been such a massive part of your professional life. You've worked alongside Ricky and Charlie for years now. But before that, there was Dick and Dom. You've even been on a road trip with Gemma Collins.
Yeah.
Man alive.
Yeah, Gem. Easy, Gem.
So talk me through the men and women who've proved to be invaluable as wingmen and wingwomen. And it doesn't just have to be at work. I mean, like, I know your sister, for example, is somebody that you can't imagine life without. You two are super tight, aren't you?
Yeah. My number one is Yona. Like, we call her the angel of the family because... She's the kind of person that goes out of her way for everyone. I always tell, I might have even said this on her wedding day. So there was a story where my gran started to lose her vision and she basically called all the doctors in Ghana because she wasn't living here at the time. And she was like, my gran needs this surgery. It needs to be done now. And they were like, cool, but it's going to cost this much. It was like a crazy amount. My sister didn't have the money. My gran didn't have the money. So she sat and called every member of our family, aunts, uncles, cousins. She was like, whatever you've got, I've set up this account. Just put this money into this account. It's for grandma. And no one could argue because my gran used to be the kind of person that would come to England, would take care of the babies for like a year, then go back home to Ghana. It was like mad. So
she's
everyone
a superhero. So your sister kind of crowdfunded before that was even a thing.
Before it was a thing, right? So she's collected all this money, called up this doctor, booked an operation, my gran had this surgery and then she could see again. Like, that's the kind of stuff that my sister does. Like, no one asks her to do it. She just goes, right, this needs to be done. And she's just really good like that. And like I said, I've told you before, like, she's just got this self-belief and she believes in everyone. And she can turn a negative into positive. I remember when, because you know how this industry works. It's literally like a roller coaster. Sometimes you're mad busy. Sometimes it's really quiet. And I remember the first time things went quiet when we was at KISS. And we were doing MTV, and MTV kind of stopped. KISS TV had stopped for a bit, and we weren't doing that much television. We still had DJ gigs, we still had radio, but the TV stuff had stopped. And I was thinking, oh, sugar. And I remember calling my sister up and going, they're bored of us, you know? I don't think we're going to be able to do this in a few years. And she was like, what? I said, yeah, no one's asked us to do any screen tests. I've not got any TV gigs. We've not been on TV for about 3 or 4 months. And my sister said to me, until no one is listening to you on the radio and no one's going to your gigs, don't call me and don't give up. Just keep going. She goes, when everyone stops listening, then give me a call and let me know and tell me that you're worried. But she goes, until then, just keep going. And I was like, it's an interesting way of thinking. I was like, okay, cool. And we're still here. We're still grinding. That was about, because that was my old place. That was about 15 years ago.
Wow. So do you find that you worry less about that stuff now?
Yeah, I don't give myself a chance to worry about stuff. I think if I'm ever nervous, I just do it. I just have to get it done. Like, I don't get, because I think that's the thing. With me, I end up creating this narrative in my mind and I talk myself out of stuff.
So, well, that's good. And also, you've always got somebody by your side. So we've talked about Yona as being a really invaluable wingwoman. But Ricky and Charlie, I mean, Ricky you met at uni. But where did Charlie come into the equation?
So Charlie was at KISS. Charlie was there way before us. She was with Bam Bam. She was with Street Boy. She was with Robin Banks. So
she's,
it's funny because everyone, yeah, they're all of them legends. And everyone thinks, oh, you guys were put together with Charlie. No, we came into her house.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why we worked is because we all had this, we all had the same drive and we all have really similar values. Like, Charlie, the way I speak about me and my sister, woohoo! Wait till you see the way Charlie speaks about her brother and her mum and dad. Wow, you ain't seen family like that. No way. And then Rick's, he's like head of the house. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you go to, like, you go to Rick's for that. Like, if anything's up, he's just like the man, and he's just always had this mad swag, and he's cool. Like, even when the first time I met him, me and my friend Leroy were sitting in this club, and we were just like, it was just terrible music, and he just came up in like designer wear, and he introduced himself, and he's just this really cool guy that came from Brit school and was just on point from day dot. So yeah, but there's loads
he's
of
slick,
us.
Isn't he, Ricky?
Ricky is slick for real.
Slick,
he's
Rick.
He's the real deal. That's it's Rick, Slick Rick by name and nature.
Nothing seems to faze him. He's got this quiet, calm confidence.
And I think with Ricky, he's just a warm character. Like, everyone loves him. Like, I don't know anyone that doesn't like Ricky. I remember my mum was so, like, my mum met him and she was just so gassed by him. Like, she just loved Ricky. And so yeah,
she loves him more than you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I didn't want to say it, but yeah, that's probably the case. But yeah, there's loads of us. There's like my uni boys. I've got two really close friends from school. I've got my cousin Joseph, and we're like a little village of people. And if you need like help with your car, you can go to this person. If you need help with your property, you can go to this person. If you're having problems in your love life, you go this person. Like, everyone has like their own little role. And we all kind of support each other. So I'm quite lucky in that sense.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, like, you've collected good people.
Yeah. I think you have to in this world. I think that's what keeps me sane anyway.
That's what we're here for, right?
Yeah,
definitely. Human connections in an age of tech. Nothing makes you feel better than people, do they?
Yeah. I thought I was a loner. I thought I quite enjoyed being like my own space. But when we went into lockdown, I realised how much I need people around me. I hated lockdown by the end of it.
Yeah. I think for people that lock down on their own, I think there is a conversation to be had around how they're impacted by that. Because I think it was long and difficult and erosive.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But were you still broadcasting?
Yeah, we did the show. What happened was one person would have to go in at a time. So this is quite deep. So my mum got really ill in lockdown. She actually
with
got COVID. Yeah, she got taken to hospital. Oh. And so it freaked me out. Thank God she's fine now. But I didn't want to go into the office. I didn't want to leave my house. And so Ricky and Charlie, this is what I'm saying about the support. Mm. They would go in like each week. So one week it would be Ricky, one week it would be Charlie. They would control the desk and the faders and stuff. And I'd sit in this room and broadcast from here for 8 months. It took 8 months before I came back into the studio. And even then I felt weird about it. But yeah, it was first part of lockdown, I loved it because like I'm doing the show from home in my pants. It's great. And then by the end of it, I was like, I hate this. And then I was worried about my mum. And it was like when it was bad, it was when no one knew what this thing was. And she's a care worker. And they were like the people that were hit the worst, you mean? And she, because of my mum is this
and really
tiny.
Not properly looked out for.
Not
or
looked
after.
Out for. And my mum is the kind, I'm going to introduce you to my mum. When you meet her, she refuses not to work. And when we were saying to her, Mum, like, we've turned on the news, they're saying this, they're saying you need to stay at home. She was like, well, no, because what about my patients? What about the care home that I work at? I can't leave them. Like, who's going to feed them? Who's going to clean them? And I was like, yeah, but Mum, who's going to take care of you? And she was like, no, I have to go. And so she kept going to work. She didn't stop working. And then she got ill. So I had these mad emotions going through my head because I was like, I get you're trying to help someone, but like, who's helping you, Mum? And then she got ill. And then I didn't know whether to be upset with her or sad or what. It was just all these different mad emotions going through my head. But yeah, lockdown was a mad time. It was a really crazy time.
It's funny as well, isn't it? Because we don't really talk about it, do we? It's a bit like the war. But I think once you come out of it, you just don't want to look back and kind of rake over the coals of it. But we lived through the most extraordinary times. And I don't even talk about it every week, let alone every day, you know. And it was massive and seismic and life-changing. It's weird that we don't, isn't it?
It's so interesting you say that. Because every now and then I do have moments where, that's probably why I brought it up, where I do remember it. Because I was at a festival the other day and it was an amazing festival. And even just watching Glastonbury, I was like, a few years ago, you know, we weren't even allowed to sit in a house with your family.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing festivals on TV.
I thought, will we ever go to a crowded environment again? Will we ever play a show? And then when you get your head around all of that, so many years later, as you're all kind of putting the jigsaw of your head back together, you find out that in Downing Street, they weren't living by the same rules. And for people like your mum, who played it by the book and put others before herself, you know, shame on them.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's why for me, like, people talk about your heroes. And it's funny because I made a lot of celebrities my heroes. And then one by one, they got knocked down. Like, I'm not even going to mention any names, but there's certain people who in the industry who I grew up loving, and now you wouldn't look up to them in the same way. So my heroes are my sister and my mum and people like that. They're my real life heroes.
What about Dick and Dom? Because Dick and Dom gave you a break at a time when you really needed it. I mean, it was a bit of a game changer. You became part of their setup whilst dressed as a dolphin performing the Running Man. So, I mean, as auspicious starts go, Melv, it's up there.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that. Do you know what? You are...
The devil's all the detail, you know?
Yeah, that's what's scary about you. Your partners could never cheat on you, boy. You would find everything out. So listen, you remind me of a broadcaster called Nardwa. He's Canadian, right? But he goes in on the research, like in. Like,
but you know what? I think that like if you're going to give me an hour of your time, I should give you the courtesy and respect.
People don't do that, though.
Of looking into your life and finding the very best bits. You know, I never invite somebody onto the show to show the bad bits about their life. I want to come on and I want you to come away from this show going, I really enjoyed that. And boy, you know, almost looking at yourself through a new lens going, like you did at the beginning, he's all right, you know? It's like, you know, it's like a little bit of... I don't know, positive therapy.
No,
I don't
you're right.
Know.
No, I like it.
So anyway, I digress. Rabbit holes are my favourite place to go with guests. And you, as a running man dressed as a dolphin, is where we'll reconfigure this story and pick up. So go on, Dick and Dom.
So Dick and Dom, first ever show on television that I ever worked on. It was through actually a friend at university called Chanel Robinson, which is why I always say, like I did a panel the other day, and when I speak to young people and stuff, and they always go, what advice do you have? And I'm like, one of my bits of advice is be nice. Like people gotcha. Underestimate the power of niceness. That's probably why you asked me to come on this today, is because you've gone, Melvin's not a dickhead. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, totally. So, and you know what? Every time I leave you, I leave with a smile, Melv, right?
That's
and people remember how you make them feel. It's that old adage, isn't it?
Exactly. There's a million people you could speak to who you have access to. And so I think when you're nice, people remember that, actually. And so Chanel, we got on very well at uni. She started working at CBBC literally as soon as she got out of university.
Was she like one of those bright stars at uni that was always going to go places?
Yeah, she was like proactive. While me and Ricky were downloading stuff illegally on Napster, she was like sending in application forms to like every single broadcaster.
She's got spreadsheets, clipboards.
Yeah. And like me and Ricky just sitting in the corner like messing around. but Chanel was like amazing and started working for the BBC like mad early. And then she messaged me one day and was like, Melvin, I'm working on this show. I can't pay you, but you'll get to see how TV works. And then, you know, maybe it might lead to something else. And I just came in. She gave me this outfit. She was like, you're going to start dancing when I give you the signal. And I remember my gran used to say, whatever you do in life, do it to the best of your ability, no matter what it is. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm in the dolphin outfit. No one can see me. Let me just do what I'm doing. And I just bust all these moves. And
this is pretty strictly, right?
Pretty strictly, yeah, before my strictly training. And the producer, a guy called Steve Ride, he came downstairs and Richard and Dominic were there and they were like, that was hilarious. Do you want to come back? And then from that point on, I would come every single week and they'll give me a different character to do. Like, to be fair, for about a year, I didn't really have any lines. It was all kind of like costume work and character work. And then they employed like three other guys. So a guy called Ian Kirkby, Dave Chapman and Lee Barnett, all amazing performers, all like studied theatre, like to like either at Lam Rada or Lambda or whatever, like proper performing arts gods. Ian has done loads of productions. He's just like a proper like theatre head thespian. And then Dave is so big now, he actually does all the production work for Star Wars.
Wow.
So, yeah, these are the guys who I was around. And they kind of taught me like how to act and do stuff. And then the show got bigger and bigger. They won like two children's BAFTAs.
Yeah.
I was on there for like 5 years.
Wow. It was. When did they start paying you?
About 2 years in.
This is what I mean about persistence, right? Goes right back to question number one.
And Ian Kirkby, because his wife was she was an agent. She was a TV agent. So the rule was at the BBC, whatever someone gets paid, then everyone had to get paid. So I got
David
paid
Nations.
Really well because of Ian and everyone else. Yeah.
That's great. But the fact is, you turned up for 2 years unpaid because you were learning something. You were getting better. And yeah. I mean, for all the silliness of what it was, I bet it's informed the broadcaster you've become.
It's funny because even till this day, I have so much respect for Richard and Dominic. Dick and Dom are incredible broadcasters.
Very underrated, aren't they?
Underrated. Every weekend, they were in a studio and half the time, there was a massive script, but a lot of the stuff that happened was not scripted. Mm. A lot of it was unplanned and they had 8 kids running around to deal with every single week. And they did it and were so good at it. And so whenever I see them, they'll call me up and be like, Melvin, can you do this? And I never argue because of I remember the opportunity they gave me. I never forget that. I'm quite a loyal person in that sense.
Oh, so you've got good people.
Yeah.
But you've got good people because you are good people.
I hope so, Kate.
Now, I love talking to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. This is really nice, actually.
It's good. I love it. So this is what the dream show, right?
This
write
is the
your dream
show.
Ticket.
I can see why it's so popular now.
I'm living the dream. It's great. Well, it only works because I have interesting guests, so thank you.
No, anytime. You know I'm always here for you, so thank you for having me.
My huge thanks to Melvin Adoom. What a lovely man. That's why he's been doing this for 20 years. You can catch him every night, 9 till 11 on Radio 1 with Charlie Hedges and Ricky. And if you want to learn more about how you can save your own sperm or the sperm of someone you love, then don't forget, streaming on 4OD right now, Save Our Sperm. And for more fascinating chat with professional radio heads, why not head to our back catalogue where you'll find episodes with Ken Bruce, with Simon Mayo, Emma Barnett, Vernon Kay, Jordan North, Sheila Fogarty and Fee and Jane Glover, to name but a few. And we've also got episodes with Jeanette from Strictly and Russell Kane in there, if that's more up your street. I'll be back next Tuesday with another drop of vintage guests in our midweek mini episode, Something from the Cellar. Until then, thanks for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.